The following program, The Russ Belleville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belleville Show are their own, and The Russ Belleville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Monday, September 24th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I hope it's a good 420 for you wherever you may be watching this show, at whatever time you may be watching this show. It's show number 61, and we got plenty of stuff to get to. First, let me introduce hanging out in the studio with, we got Brian the Red hanging out to my right. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing all right.
Good weekend for you, I hope.
Adjusted. Oh, yeah, it was pretty... Yeah, it was all
excellent.
Right.
Glad to hear it. Well, coming up later up on the show, we would have Cannabis Carrie bringing us our 420 headline news. Unfortunately, there is no internet up at the virtual studio in Grastoria today. So no internet connection means no Cannabis Carrie. So I'll be bringing you the headline news, which includes most recent stories coming out of our hometown here in Portland, Oregon, regarding the so-called abuse of the medical marijuana program. We'll take a look at that, plus a look at the donations that are flowing or not flowing to the different areas of the country that are trying to get marijuana legalized. That's in the headline news. Plus a couple of stories from Montana having to do with their medical marijuana program. A new poll is out regarding the initiative referendum 124 up there that would repeal the repeal. We'll talk about the polling and talk about a recent court case where a provider is not going to be able to use an entrapment defense for his medical marijuana operation. Also, we're going to go behind the headlines. I'm going to take you a little deeper in a little mini rant about those Oregonian stories that popped up this weekend here. And then at half past the hour, cross our fingers, because I do believe we got Michael Kravitz from Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access calling in. But I do have to make a caveat. He told me that he was selected for jury duty and he might be on a jury. Now, the chance that he gets on a jury, especially if it's a drug crime and the lawyer knows what he's doing, probably pretty slim. But you got to be that caveat there, so it's not his fault if he doesn't make it in. He's going to try to make it in at 1:30 here and talk to us about the issues of medical cannabis access for our nation's veterans. And then, oh, I'm so happy to have our guest at the end of the show joining us, calling in. He's here on the West Coast with us right now. Jorge Cervantes, the legendary internationally known grower, is going to be calling in at 1:45 here Pacific time, and we're going to talk to him about what's up lately. He's got some new projects he'd like to tell us all about, plus I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about marijuana growing, and hey, maybe we can convince him to stick around for hour two and take your questions live here at 971-533-7111. Toker Talk Radio is where you are the voice of the marijuana nation. We want to hear from you. Call anytime. The voicemail is now available. We'll be right back with the headline news after this.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us go.
simply business. It's simply business, you know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
Honey, our ballots came in the mail today. I can't wait to cast my vote for Measure 80.
Measure 80? Is that the one to legalize marijuana? I don't know about that.
Why not? Marijuana is far safer than alcohol.
I know that, but I worry about kids smoking pot.
It's easier for kids to buy pot than beer, because clerks check for proper ID.
Sure, but what about stone drivers?
We've had medical marijuana for 14 years, and yet our traffic safety stats are better now than before medical marijuana.
Okay, but what about people coming in stoned to work?
Come on now, honey. Oregon's workplaces are safer than ever, and we have over 50,000 medical marijuana patients. Nothing about Measure 80 prevents employers from maintaining drug-free workplaces. I know change is scary, but Oregon really needs jobs and tax revenue, and Measure 80 will provide them.
Okay, safer for kids and tax revenue for our state? Makes sense to me. I'm voting yes on Measure 80.
Paid for by Oregonians for Law Reform, OregonLawReform.com.
Fishbone pulled up there. We pulled up today in the van, and I walked out of the building, walked through the big building over there. I walked outside, and I'm walking over by the lake, and I just see everybody casually smoking weed like it's all right. Like it's supposed to be like that.
Because it is all right.
Like you ain't got to worry about no police coming and asking you what you're smoking or what are you doing here or let me see your driver's license. See, that's how they do it in Amsterdam. Everybody's just out there chilling. Ain't nobody stressing. You go buy your weed at the shop. You go kick it, smoke your weed, walk the street, do whatever you want to, and you don't even get...
I have to say that there was one question that was voted on that ranked fairly high. And that was whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy and job creation. I don't know what this says about the online audience. But the answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy to grow our economy. So...
nearly 1 million lives wrecked by a marijuana arrest every year, Mr. President. Politely tell President Obama what you think about legalization by calling the White House at 202-456-1111.
Now it's time for your 420 headline news with Carrie Gallagher. She's on vacation. I'm Russ Belville with the news. Big money donors are avoiding Oregon for legalization measures in Colorado and Washington, reporting from the Associated Press. Pro-marijuana donors with deep pockets are pouring millions into legalization measures on the ballot in Washington and Colorado, but they appear to be bypassing a similar pot campaign in Oregon. Marijuana legalization advocates connected with billionaire donors George Soros and Peter Lewis say the Oregon measure doesn't appear as politically attractive as it is in the other two states, the Oregonian reported. In Washington, two recent polls show a majority favoring legalization. Oregon's Measure 80 has not polled nearly as well, which is, quote, cause for concern and a disincentive, end quote, to donate money. Ethan Nadelman, a prominent national opponent of the nation's drug laws, told the newspaper. He heads Drug Policy Action, a New York-based nonprofit that donated $715,000 in Washington and another $90,000 in Colorado. Law enforcement officials opposing marijuana legalization in Oregon eyed the big dollars from national pot advocates and expected to be heavily outspent this year. But Measure 80 is shaping up to be a low-dollar affair. Quote, we're trying to bring that money, but we haven't been successful so far, end quote, says Paul Stanford, Measure 80's sponsor, who owns a chain of medical marijuana clinics around the country. Quote, they say our poll numbers aren't that great, end quote. Stanford said he largely tapped out his own resources by spending more than $400,000 to make the ballot. His disclosure report lists just $13,000 in contributions, although it may not reflect all of his donations since he has up to 30 days to report them. Meanwhile, two other marijuana activists have formed a separate group, Oregonians for Law Reform, with the goal of raising enough money to run a separate campaign in favor of Measure 80. Stanford just hasn't, quote, been able to build the foundation that big donors want to see in place before they contribute directly, said Sam Chapman, a recent University of Oregon graduate who started the group along with Calico Castile. He added that oh, this is a misprint in the story. Pardon me. He added that Stanford's checkered history has put off some donors. Stanford had filed for bankruptcy at least twice and pleaded guilty in 2011 to income tax evasion, according to an Associated Press profile of him earlier this year. Reporting from the San Francisco Gate, a new poll, voters favor tighter medical marijuana law. Helena, Montana. Montana voters support a more restrictive medical marijuana law, oppose repealing the death penalty, and would like to see environmental laws relaxed to encourage more fossil fuel development, a new poll shows. Mason-Dixon Polling interviewed 625 registered Montana voters who said they expect to vote in the general election. The poll has a margin of error of plus or minus 4 percentage points. Poll results show 44% are in favor of keeping the more restrictive medical marijuana law passed by the 2011 legislature, while 31% want the state to go back on to the original 2004 voter-passed initiative. One quarter are undecided on how they will vote on Referendum 124, which seeks to repeal the 2004 initiative and keep the 2011 changes that limit medical conditions for which medical marijuana may be prescribed, limiting caregivers to 3 patients, and not allowing them to make a profit. In other news from Montana, from the Republic, Helena, Montana, Associated Press reporting, a former medical marijuana provider who goes to trial Monday over last year's federal crackdown will not be allowed to claim that government officials entrapped him by making statements that led him to believe that he would not be prosecuted. Jurors will also be told to ignore any mention of Montana's medical marijuana law. U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen's jury instructions say state laws are irrelevant to the federal charges against Chris Williams, a co-owner of the now-defunct Montana Cannabis. The bans are a blow to Williams, who is charged with multiple drug manufacturing, trafficking, and weapons counts. He is the only medical marijuana provider to stand trial among the dozens whose businesses, houses, and warehouses were raided in the March 2011 crackdown of the state's largest pot operators. Quote, "You must disregard any statements or arguments about the defendant or others purporting to comply or not to comply with state laws concerning marijuana," end quote, Christensen's jury instructions read. Williams had planned to subpoena several journalists about statements from Attorney General Eric Holder and other government officials that made Williams believe he would not be prosecuted under federal law for selling medical marijuana. Those are your 420 headlines for September 24th, 2012. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and a look at the Oregonians' expose on medical marijuana abuse. This is the Russ Belville Show. Stick around.
We're not looking to end beer summits at the White House or change the way people behave on the campaign trail. We just believe adults, in the privacy of their homes, should be allowed to use marijuana instead of alcohol if that's what they prefer. 40 years ago, our government launched an irrational war on marijuana for reasons unrelated to the actual and limited harms of the substance. It's time for a more sensible approach. It's time to regulate marijuana, paid for by the campaign to regulate marijuana like
The Russ Belville Show.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
According to lifelong pot smoker and rocket scientist Carl Sagan, making apple pies from scratch is extremely difficult.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Radical Russ and the Rolla J Studios crew will be right back after these messages.
A morning filled with 400 billion suns.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to get behind the headlines here. And, of course, the stories that broke in our hometown newspaper, the Oregonian, are foremost on my mind. In a two-part story in this Sunday's Oregonian, reporter Noelle Crombie paints a picture of how the Oregon medical marijuana program is subject to severe abuses by those who wish to profit from interstate marijuana trafficking. In the story, she details the crimes of Elizabeth Saul, who was involved in a criminal conspiracy to transport pounds of weed from Oregon to destinations east. The story notes how a pound in Oregon sells for $1,000 to $3,000, but can fetch over $5,000 in the Midwest and the East Coast. So why is it that Oregon weed costs half the price? Has anybody at the Oregonian taken Economics 101? You know, especially that part about the law of supply and demand. I mean, is there any other Oregon product that fetches twice the in-state market value that we don't export like crazy and tax the hell out of? There are all manner of statistics from the police in her story, who certainly wouldn't want to paint medical marijuana in a bad light, would they? They claim that 40% of Oregon pot seized has ties to the medical marijuana program. Well, all right, okay. So we've established that criminals will commit crimes, and given the opportunity to shield themselves from prosecution, they will avail themselves of those opportunities. So what should we do about it? See, the underlying part that they're trying to get to in these articles is to buttress the case by law enforcement against a medical marijuana program they've always hated. Try finding articles in the archives of the Oregonian about our medical marijuana patient numbers that doesn't include the word abuse. They've been pushing this meme since I moved here in 2003. Oh no, 15,000 patients, it's abuse! Look, 25,000 patients, oh my God, it's abuse! Holy cow, 50,000 patients, it's clear abuse! Never once do they portray the growing patient rolls as actually reducing crime by definition, as now there are 50,000 fewer citizens guilty of felony marijuana possession. And reducing crime in fact, since they can now grow for themselves and not have to purchase marijuana on the black market. Of course, that's not a sexy story that sells ads in a dying print medium, and it certainly doesn't help the cops in any way. Law enforcement's job was much easier when the mere presence of a plant means they could just haul away citizens to prison and then seize and auction off all their money and property and equipment that they were caught growing with for the police profit. But when they have to determine if someone's healthy enough to put in a cage or sick enough to jump through the hoops needed to get a medical permission slip, well, that makes police jobs much harder and their asset forfeiture profits drop. And ooh, how they hate it when the stoner they so want to lock up whips out that medical marijuana card. These articles will be used by law enforcement for a push to severely restrict and curtail the medical marijuana program in Oregon. We have to stop the abuse of medical marijuana by criminals. All right, so what do? Reduce the plant limits, reduce the possession limits, make it tougher to find a doctor, start inspections, raise medical marijuana fees. Oh, wait, sorry, did that one already. Require patients only to grow marijuana for themselves, only 1,000 feet away from a school, park, daycare, church, state park, roller rink, McDonald's, play place, or any residential dwelling where the occupants think the smell of marijuana is icky. Yeah, that's going to stop the criminals from trying to double their money on weed. No. All the restrictions on medical marijuana are going to do is A, hurt the sick and disabled people the program was truly intended for by making it even harder for them to get a card and find marijuana. B, return a bunch of the other people back to buying their black market weed from the guy, increasing the profits of criminals. C, push more of those growers back underground, raising the price of marijuana, which will D, increase the profit motivation for criminals to grow weed in clandestine grows that harm the environment. In other words, criminals were growing Oregon marijuana for big profits long before medical marijuana, and they will keep doing so no matter what you do to medical marijuana. The problem isn't that we're providing shelter for criminals to abuse the medical marijuana law. They're criminals! They abuse any law! But the vast majority of Oregon medical marijuana cardholders are doing everything they can to follow laws. The opposite of criminals, if you will. Whether you think they're sick or not, they go to their doctor, they collect medical records, they go to a clinic, they pay another doctor for a legal recommendation, they go to the state, they pay annual protection money, they fill out paperwork for a legal card, and then they go to great lengths to stay within the limits, keeping their use private, growing fewer plants than allowed, keeping less marijuana on hand than allowed, and frequently dealing with shortages of marijuana by giving away their excess to other cardholders, not selling it, as allowed by law. And those that do walk in the gray areas of the dispensaries that we don't really have still do so in the belief they're following laws and they're charging prices that are below what the criminals charge on the streets and far less than what they could get for selling it out of state. The problem we have with Oregon's medical marijuana laws is the absurdity of trying to determine who's healthy enough to lock up for this plant in the first place. The problem isn't our medical marijuana law is too generous, it's that it ignores 90% of the marijuana consumers who aren't medical. The problem is that the medical marijuana law is in opposition to a stronger law called supply and demand. Oregon and America love Oregon marijuana. Until we recognize that Oregon will always supply marijuana and America will always demand marijuana, criminals will always exploit the prohibition profit wherever they can and whether there are medical marijuana laws or not. And going backwards now can only hurt the truly sick and disabled who need medical marijuana to live. Let's just get real and legalize marijuana already. Vote yes on Measure 80. And to be fair, I did just get that in with 3 seconds to spare for our 20 after break. It's 21 after now, but hey, you know, we're stoners. Take a break. Smoke if you got them. We'll be right back.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Funky roller rink.
Ooh, yeah.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy. And I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Rink. Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
It's always a party at the Funky Roller Rink.
Count your computer. Count your computer.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belleville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in PodSafe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our daily Toker tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your daily Toker tunes.
All right, everybody, welcome to Monday. And on Roots Monday, we cover the reefer jazz, the country, the blues, the folk music. And today, we are going to do a little music that you'll hear on tonight's Viper Hour. We have a show that we do every Monday night at 8 o'clock, although I've been slacking a little lately, but we're going to get it back on.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going
to looking forward to the Viper Hour.
Yeah, do a Viper Hour tonight. And that's for all you Vipers out there. And if you don't know, Viper, of course, is a slang term from from the beginnings of our cannabis culture back in the early 1900s, you know, smoking a viper, you know, yep. Sounds like a viper. You're hissing, right? That's that hissing sound. So
yeah.
We're going to bring some Viper Hour music to you, and the Viper Hour music is all dedicated to the reefer jazz, the very first expressions of our cannabis community and our cannabis culture, and today is no different. We're going to go to a tune, actually, that Big Daddy Fink sent me a whole bunch of great reefer jazz tunes to add to the library. This is one of them, the Tommy Dorsey Band. Tommy Dorsey, this song's called Miner Goes A-Muggin'. Thank you.
On every Tommy Dorsey program, you find a Cy Oliver tune, and right about here's where you find one now. Miner Goes A-Muggin'. Finishing touches to our spotlight program, Tommy Dorsey featuring Buddy Rich at the drums polishes off another Cy Oliver tune. Well, get it!
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
You better look at the clock, cause it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green and smoke that weed.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, welcome back, folks. Calling an audible here. Still waiting for a call from Michael Kravitz. And again, I'm not sure he'll be able to call in because he was selected to jury duty. So if he happens to call during this rant, I'll cut it short and we'll get him on the line. But I got this chat coming through. One of our chatters asked if I had heard about the 73-year-old grandma who was on felony marijuana charges. And no, I hadn't. So I'm pulling it up right now and we're going to take a look at this. The reporting coming from Huffington Post in their crime section. And the headline from Andy Campbell says, Darlene Mays, 73-year-old, sold pot and had illegal guns in Oklahoma, cops say. And let's just check this out. This granny's ganja wasn't for glaucoma. Turns out she might have been the biggest pot dealer in town. When cops kicked down the door of an elderly woman's Oklahoma home on Monday, they said they knew they'd find some marijuana. What they didn't expect was that 73-year-old Darlene Mays was packing 4 pounds of pot, $276,000 in cash, a semi-automatic pistol, and a revolver, the Daily reported. Investigators had been following Mays' alleged drug ring for years, but they didn't know she was the kingpin until Monday, KJRH-TV reported. They believe she supplied about 40% of the marijuana circulating in the vicinity, which includes Tulsa and parts of Arkansas, Kansas, and Missouri. Cops allege that Mays had plenty of dealers working for her, including her son Jerry, who was arrested Monday, accused of carrying thousands of dollars in cash and nearly 2 pounds of pot he intended to sell. In Mays' house, cops found the supply in her bedroom, which reeked of weed. A vacuum-sealed bag full of the stuff was found in her closet, and bundles of bills labeled $15,000 were found under her box spring. They found a pipe and another bag of weed in the bathroom and a total of $200,000 more in vacuum-sealed bags in a guest room where Mays' grandchildren reportedly slept. According to Mark Woodward, spokesperson for the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics, quote, she knew exactly what she was doing and supplying and exactly who she's profiting from, end quote. Okay. Wow. The Oklahoma cops have taken down the big drug ring 73-year-old grandma. Oh, boy. Well, that's good news, because now nobody will ever be able to get weed in Oklahoma again. We finally won the war on drugs. We took down the 73-year-old grandma kingpin. You know, time after time, year after year, I have to report these stories. And it gets to a point where you just don't know how to sarcastically refer to it anymore. How to deal with it anymore without just calling it what it is. And it's terrorism. It's simply terrorism that's being engaged against our own people. Nobody was forcing Granny to grow pot at gunpoint. Nobody was forcing anyone at gunpoint to buy any of Granny's pot. There's a whole bunch of people in the Tulsa, Arkansas, Southwest Missouri, all that area there, who liked smoke pot. And here's Granny setting up a business to supply it to them. The only guns and danger issue exists because our government continues to make it illegal. Continues to make it so that if Granny is assaulted, or if Granny has somebody try to strong arm her, or if Granny has to deal with a competitor that uses unscrupulous methods, Granny can't go to the cops. Granny can't go to the courts. Granny can't solve this the way that, say, Dos Equis would solve a dispute with Corona. Can't take it to court. Has to be solved with guns. And it's created a profit margin so great that criminals are more than willing to take the risk to do it, right? They know whoever they go after might have a gun, but they'll take the risk anyway because money literally grows on trees. Nobody's shooting each other over tequila. Well, I mean, maybe because of the tequila, but not over the business of tequila is my point. It just gets frustrating because for so long now, We get these stories, and you have to ask yourself, what other criminal enterprise would a 73-year-old woman get involved with, right? She's not Heisenberg here setting up meth labs, right? She's not running guns. She's not engaged in things that are harming others. What is it going to take to finally break through this? I mean, obviously, what I think it's going to take is a state finally standing up and legalizing the stuff. Washington, Colorado, Oregon, all stepping up to the plate to do that. And it's stories like these that frustrate me to no end when I hear of the people who oppose those legalization efforts in Washington and Colorado. That frustrates me to no end. To constantly hear from the people in those states who are pot smokers themselves, who are well protected by the strides that have been made to imperfectly legalize to this point so far, complaining that, well, it doesn't have home grow. I can't vote for it. It doesn't have home grow in it. You don't have home grow now. I still fail to see why that's a deal breaker. But to hear that kind of complaining and whining about, oh, this legalization isn't good enough, knowing that the people in Oklahoma are going to have to wait however many decades longer after we finally legalize out west before they even begin talking about this stuff, makes me understand that there's just no time to mess around anymore. There's no time to just wait on this stuff anymore. You know, another issue that has gotten to me in discussing this and in all the states, you know, we've got among marijuana activists, a group of people who are a self-selected group that are largely the people who have been most screwed over by the drug war, right? I can't tell you how many people I know as activists who didn't become activists until they got busted. Oh, I got raided, or I got busted, or somebody I knew got busted. And that's what made them become an activist. Or on the medical front, they themselves are either sick or disabled, or one of their loved ones or friends are so sick and disabled and have seen the effects of prohibition and how that's, you know, kept them from having the medicine that'll help them the best. And that leads them into activism. But the point I'm getting at here is that a lot of times the people in activism are a self-selected group for whom the worst case scenario has happened, right? So we end up in a situation where people are all in possession of these worst case scenarios that happen to them or someone they love, and they repeat those amongst the group. So they all see these worst case scenarios. And before you know it, all they can see are the possible worst case scenarios that are going to happen should we pass legalization in this particular form. I'm speaking in particular of the 502 people in this respect. Oh my God, we'll legalize it. And then they won't let the state stores happen, and they won't let the state growing happen. And then all we'll have is decriminalization of an ounce and a bad per se DUID law. To which the people in Oklahoma are going, decriminalization of an ounce, huh? Gosh, that would be fantastic. Right? Since when did we become against decriminalization? I guess that's just another frustration that I have. So we have the grandma in Oklahoma here, now facing felony time. Right. They'll probably give her probation or whatever. But, you know, she'll have no income, really. It's not like she'll be able to get a job. Not like I imagine the Social Security would be coming in. Right. Because she's probably not, you know, worked or gotten a way to file for that. Right. But the society will be safer because we took down Granny. People in Oklahoma will never smoke pot again. We'll all be safer. No, what's going to happen here? Somebody else going to step up and do it. Somebody else going to be able to charge more money to do it, because the customers will be desperate, having lost their steady connection. And it'll just keep going on and on and on. And the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics will continue to deny any sort of medical utility to marijuana. People all throughout the Midwest, Oklahoma, Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, people who are really sick, you know, got MS, Lou Gehrig's disease, cancer, AIDS, glaucoma, they'll continue to go without or risk imprisonment and spend way too much on marijuana that will be supplied by whoever it is that takes Granny's place. And some of them will get caught, these sick people. Some of them will get caught and they'll get busted and they'll have to do probation where they're P-tested, right? And they won't be able to use their medicine because they'll get caught for that. They'll have to use something else that, you know, puts them into a drug-induced stupor and has terrible side effects that they got to take another pill for. And of course, they got to spend all that money on those pills. That's what's going to happen because we took down Granny in Oklahoma. Yeah. And again, it will go on and on and on until we finally come to our senses and recognize that some people like to smoke pot. That's it. Some people like to smoke pot. And they will. And they will continue to. The genie's out of the bottle. It's not going away. Some people like to smoke pot. I'm one of them. I rarely drink. Don't like drinking anymore. Don't even really enjoy it much. It's offered to me. You know, every now and then I might have a margarita with a Mexican meal. That's about it. But because I make that choice, I'm somehow a criminal. I'm literally in my home almost all the time. And almost all the time in front of this computer and researching and writing. I'm not driving around. I can't drive around. The brakes on my Jeep are shot. Got to get those fixed. I'm not driving. I'm not harming anyone. And to think that we need to keep this criminal, we need to keep these laws, that there are people so afraid their teenage kid might smoke a joint, they're willing to not let a cancer patient have one. That's what we're dealing with, the kind of mentality that thinks We've got to lock up this 73-year-old grandma for the safety of the people. What kind of insanity is this? And how are we going to stop it? Well, if we do the right thing, we're going to stop it by passing legalization in Washington, Colorado, and Oregon this session. That's what we're going to do. All right. Sorry about that. Didn't mean that to be so loud there. Supposed to be going to break here, so I'm going to take a little break.
Activism begins with.
And when we come back, we will have Jorge Cervantes on the line, and we will talk about what his latest projects, and maybe take a couple of calls. So stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show.
Right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
On the road again.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Friends, it's time we legalize the responsible use of marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. We're destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of good, hardworking Americans every year in this country for no good reason. There's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking pot. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at norml.org.
The cannabis community includes a diverse set of activists and nonprofits working to end the prohibition of marijuana. We take the time to hear the stories of reform on the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Community Chat.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 42 after the hour. Oh, we're getting an echo in there somewhere. Might have to mute something on my end here. Jorge, if on your end you could turn down the computer, I think it's looping through.
Oh, okay.
There we go. Now we got it. Sounds a little better there. Let's see what I can do.
How's that?
That's great. We have Jorge Cervantes on the line via Skype here joining us. Thanks for being here, Jorge.
Well, thanks so much, Russ. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you got in touch with me earlier because you had some news to tell our listeners, some new projects that you're involved with. So let's get the scoop.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things. One is we've updated our website, marijuanagrowing.com.
Yeah.
And this has all this information I'm going to tell you about it. But it's marijuanagrowing.com with the J, marijuana with J. But anyway, I'm working on an update to the marijuana horticulture book. And the reason I mentioned the website is I'm still looking for a few photos. The book is going to be, the book is amazing. It's really huge. It's about twice as much information as the last book.
Oh, that sounds excellent. So marijuanagrowing.com is the website. People can find out more about the book there. And so you said you were still looking for more photographs. What are some of the requirements? I mean, what do people need to know if they want to get their photos to you?
Well, it's real easy. I've got a forum all set up under Jorge's book on the forum. So they can just go there, and I've got a list already made.
Oh.
And there's a couple hundred photos in the list, and it really, it very well could appeal to a lot of people. But this is just a portion of the photos that I need for the book. I left a lot of them open, you know, some easier photos, some nice buds, varieties and whatnot. And then there's also some more complicated things, you know, photos of hydroponic systems. I seem to be a little light on hydroponic photos.
Uh-huh. All right, folks, you heard it here first. If you've got a hydroponic garden and want to show some of it, and basically you're looking kind of like for stock stuff, like, you know, here's what this looks like, here's what that looks like, so that when you're making descriptive text, you can have something to, you know, show with it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And when I say, when you say stock, you know, it's got to be taken from a proper angle and be very high quality. It's got to be definitely, first thing is in focus. That's the first thing I always look for.
Yeah, that's...
And then the second thing, you know, it's got to be well composed. You know, well, let me just take a look at this real quick, and I'll go to the forum right now, and it's Jorge's Books, and I'll just read you a few of the name of them.
Excellent.
The new marijuana horticulture photo list. Let's see, there's all kinds of buds. Photos of auto flowering plants, you know, plants that flower automatically under any amount of light. Indica plants, ruderalis plants. A photo of somebody sealing things up in a sealamule. A photo of Lexan, for example, a greenhouse made out of Lexan. Or misting in a greenhouse. A photo of, let's see, induction lighting. There's another one. I've got a couple, but I'd like some more. I need quite a bit of information on LED lights. I haven't really searched for that much yet. The photos. So there's the list will go on and on. It's actually there's over 200 photos on this list, and yeah, it's real easy to find marijuanagrowing.com. It's a real big opportunity to collaborate on this book and get some of your work published.
Yeah, absolutely. And I presume that digital's fine. Is film okay as well?
No. Film is all in the past, actually. Yeah. Everything's got to be digital, and it's got to be high resolution.
Yeah.
Each file should be over a megabyte in size. But all of this is, like I say, all of this is explained on the website, and people can go there and you can, the photos are already coming in, and I just started this a couple days ago.
Excellent. Now at marijuanagrowing.com, will they also find your other book titles and DVD titles as well?
Oh yeah. All my stuff is there, but actually it's easiest to go to amazon.com to find my stuff.
Okay, great. We're speaking with Jorge Cervantes, internationally known cannabis expert and author of various groups on marijuana horticulture. And you're in California right now, correct?
Right. I'm in California for the next few weeks, and then I go back to Spain.
Are you there for
Go back to Barcelona. Yeah, and then I'll be going to several trade fairs over there.
Are you making appearances in California while you're here?
No, not really. There hasn't been so much to do here. I've just been writing the whole time. I've been working on this update, you know, solid for the last 3 years, writing every day pretty much.
Hmm. Oh.
And so now I'm going to go back to Spain and go to a few trade fairs. The first fair I go to will be cultiva.at. That's cultiva.at.
All right.
That's in Vienna, Austria.
You know, we've reported a little bit on what's happening in Europe as far as changes in their cannabis laws. Is there anything new you can tell us about Spain or any of the European Union countries that would be beneficial?
Well, I mean, it's not pleasant what's happening in the Netherlands now, you know.
Yeah.
They're restricting the purchase of and consumption, too, of cannabis to residents. And that's going to be real hard. I know a lot of the Dutch guys have come down to Spain over the last really 10 years, but there's been a new influx of them since that law, you know, has taken hold. And then in Austria, I don't know if most people realize this, you can grow as many clones as you want. You just can't let the plants flower. So clone growing operations are huge. I've got a good friend. In fact, I've done a video, a six-part video series on YouTube about a guy that produces, his name's Alex. He produces 10,000 clones a week.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's several other clone producers there right in Vienna. There's all, and then also just last week was the Canatrade fair. And let's see. Canatrade.ch. And that was in Switzerland. And then we also have one in San Sebastian, Iruña, the new Spanish fair or Basque fair. And that's up in North Spain by the French border. There's so many cannabis fairs, it's amazing.
Do you end up in a situation in Europe then where, I mean, like you said, with Austria, the clones are unlimited, where different countries are specializing in different things to support the overall industry?
Well, whatever you can get by with.
Yeah.
it's pretty much what happens.
Wow. That's fascinating to me.
Spain's probably the freest place to grow right now.
Spain.
It's legal for personal consumption, and you can grow a few plants at home.
Wow.
And it's not regulated.
So how is that?
That's all the regulation, really. Yeah.
How has that affected any black market trade in Spain?
It's gone up. It's been real interesting. Since there was, you know, first it was black market trade and it started to grow, but it was very difficult to compete with the hash trade.
Uh-huh.
Because Spain's always been a big crossroads for Moroccan hash. But what happened was people started forming private clubs, and they turned into basically cannabis clubs or buyers clubs. And so they would buy, they could go in there and become members and purchase some cannabis. And that's been a real big thing about for the last 3 years. And it's gone up and down. There's been police visits and different things, but it apparently continues, mm-hmm. even under the new right-wing president what's his name? I haven't said it for so long. even under... Mariano Rajoy, R-A-J-O-Y is his last name, Rajoy.
Okay.
Mariano Rajoy. And he's the leader of the Partido Popular, and then Partido Popular is the Popular Party. And those guys are the old right wing. Anyway, it's still good in Spain.
Still good in Spain.
Yeah.
Well, just west of Spain, of course, Portugal has, you know, famously decriminalized personal possession of all drugs. And that's one thing over here in the States. A lot of drug policy reformers point to Portugal and all the statistics going on there. What does Spain think of Portugal's laws in that respect, or do they care?
You know, they look at it definitely. But... you know, it's a different country and everything, and it's a definitely progressive. It's funny the way things have grown over there. You know, they've decriminalized things, but there hasn't been a commercial market that's grown. And usually the commercial market is what drives things.
Mm-hmm.
But Portugal is very, very poor. And there's only, you know, two good-sized cities there, Lisboa and Oporto. There's a third one that's not so big, but... anyway, it's looked at it as a good thing, but I haven't, I haven't been to Spain for 6 months now, so
okay.
I'm not certain.
Okay. So, of course, the big event that we hear about in Spain is Spanibus, and that's a ways off, isn't it?
That's in February. Let me look it up here real quick. Spanibus is a big deal. That's the biggest fair in Europe. Well, it's the biggest one in the world.
Yeah.
And at that fair, I think I thought I had it marked, but it's in February. And it's Spanibus, S-P, well, I'll write it down.
Like cannabis with a spa. Spanibus. And you can find
Spanibus,
out.
Yeah.
Just hit the Google. Spanibus.com has all the information on that. If you're going to be traveling to Europe, it's definitely something you should see if you get the opportunity to. How big is this for people that haven't heard of it before?
Oh, gosh, 20,000 people have wow. show up regularly over a three-day period. The first day is commercial day, and that's when the public's not invited. But the second 2 days are when the public's invited. And it's been a real interesting fair because over the years, well, things have changed. They've prohibited some stuff. But it used to be you could just bring in, like, 5 kilos of leaves and give it to the guy at the stand, you know, because there was a stand doing this or a booth, they call them here. And they were processing it into hash overnight and then giving the guy back 3/4 of the hash.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bring in your own
shrimp. That, like, that was a real popular stand.
I can imagine so.
And then there's another one, but these guys are going really strong is Canna. And over there, Canna can do anything they want, and they test cannabis right there at the stand. They can make, you know, like, I don't know, 30, 40 tests a day.
Hmm. Do the laws treat hash differently than cannabis?
Well, they're trying to distinguish, but not truly, no.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're trying to make a bit of a distinction.
That's something Fiona Apple had to learn the hard way in Texas this last weekend, that they treat hash and marijuana quite differently in Texas. Even in some of the medical marijuana states, they treat hash and marijuana differently, even though, of course, we all know they're just, you know, a concentrated version of the same thing, right?
Yeah, that's different. I don't know why they would. I suppose it'd be like the distinction between beer and wine and then hard liquor.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's what it'd be similar to, but I don't know. I don't think there needs to be a distinction between that. One thing that does kind of make me nervous is all these people making that butane hash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the butane hash is good stuff in as much as it's, you know, it's the best solvent, but alleviating or evacuating all of the solvent afterwards is difficult.
Hmm. Yeah, this has been something I just returned from the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Seattle, and they once again had another panel discussion on the use of solvents in making hash. Is that something that's being done a lot in Europe, or are they still doing it the old-fashioned way?
No, they just, water hash is the biggest thing, and also everybody, a lot of people just still smoke the Moroccan hash.
Yeah. Huh. So
it's so good.
Why do you think then we're so into the solvent hash here on the West Coast?
That's pretty simple. I think because everybody wants in America has to have the most potent, the strongest possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it comes from that.
Is that a cultural difference you find in Europe? Is that people don't really care to get so blasted high that, you know?
Exactly. That's a big characteristic. People don't like to get just totally blotto.
Hmm.
It's not cool.
It's just not cool. Yeah. Well, I wonder how much of that here in America owes to, you know, the prohibition of it, that, like, you know, the chance you're going to get any, you might as well get the strongest stuff you can. That's what happened in alcohol prohibition.
Well, yeah. And I think there's a lot of that with cannabis prohibition because people really don't have the time to, well, just really in the last 10 years have we noticed that there's a lot of different varieties of cannabis around. Before, when it was so prohibited, people noticed there was, you know, good weed and bad weed because, you know, they could buy sometimes, they could only, the supply was limited.
Yeah.
Now with the greater supply, people can have discerning taste. So there's been a big progression just because of the supply. And then before, the supply was such that it was just too expensive to make oil. Because the flower buds were worth more.
Hmm. Very good. You know, Jorge, when I was growing up, there was two kinds of weed. It was got some and don't. So I know what you're talking about. Jorge Cervantes, of course, author of so many great books on marijuana horticulture, DVDs that you should already own. And you can find more of this stuff at marijuanagrowing.com and new stuff coming out all the time. Jorge, thanks for joining us here on the Russ Belbo Show. We appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Russ. And I want one last thing.
If yes,
anybody,
sir.
Is a Russian speaker out there, the Marijuana Horticulture book just came out in Russian.
Oh, excellent. I don't even have any pithy Russian things to say to that, but that's great. I know how to say excellent in just about every other language but Russian, so all right. I'll have to look that up. Jorge, thanks
all
for
right,
joining us.
All right, Russ.
Take it easy.
Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, folks, we're going to move into hour two here. Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. And for Brian the Red and everybody here at Roller J Studios, thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.